Let's just see how big this balloon can get. It's the news, according to me. Well, good morning once again. It is. I'm still in Atlanta. Yes, I will be for a couple more days. So those of you who are wondering where I've been, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah. So I guess the Braves didn't pull it off last night. But, you know, life goes on. The main thing that I think everybody was asking last night at the game, especially after the game, for those of you who were involved in the World Series, the big question I think everybody that was being passed around was, especially after the game, this was even during the game, I guess, and even before the game, all the commentators were talking about it. The big thing that everybody was concerned about was, what's in my cup? I happen to have milk this morning. It's good for your throat. But it's not good for your throat if you're talking or using your vocal cords in any way. It's kind of a nasty material you have in your throat while you're trying to talk. But the good thing is it's not just skim milk. It's not 2%. I accidentally got whole milk, which I drink whole milk. I go for the 2% typically because it's not so fatty. But even at my age, I don't mind drinking whole milk. I know some doctors say, hey, lay off dairy. Well, if you tell me that, you might as well just tell me to die because I'm not going to do that. It's not going to happen. Yeah. Especially cheese. That's a main part of my life. The moments I live for are the moments I spend with cheese. So that's not going to happen. I put milk on my cereal. The reason I have milk this morning is because I have a couple of apple fritters. One of them, my wife bought me some apple fritters while I was home over the weekend, and I didn't get them all eaten, so I had to bring them with me. Now, you might ask how I brought those on the plane. I can't divulge any information about that. I guess you can get apple fritters on a plane now. I guess that's not a big deal. But so I brought them down here. Anyway, so I got this milk when I came down here. I just ran over to about the safest place to walk to from the hotel is right next door at a gas station. There's like a Ready Mart type place, they have a little bit of everything. And I just grabbed some milk out of the cooler. It was white. I just figured it was okay. I was more concerned about the date. And it was actually on a table type cooling type place. It wasn't even in the cooler itself. It was out kind of on a display thing, and I didn't even notice what I was getting because they were just all the same. I was mostly concerned about the date. I didn't want it to be expired more than about 2 weeks. And sure enough, I looked at it this morning and I just realized it's whole milk. So good for me. Put on a little more weight. Not that it matters. You know, I think the apple fritter is a little bit more dangerous for me to eat than probably the milk is to drink, but that's just my opinion. I'm not a doctor. What do I know? So there's a couple of things going on in the world that I think need to be talked about, and I think philosophically we need to understand what's happening, or economically, philosophically, whatever you want to call it. There's a real concern that is cropping up. And I was aware of this. I was made aware of this by an educator that I wish I could remember his name. The guy is still around. He still makes videos on YouTube occasionally. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, this guy was making, he's an economic, I should say he's a fiduciary genius. He understands money. He understands what the government does with money. He understands how the Federal Reserve is gutting our country blind and manipulating money. Banks, and this is well known, If you start looking into this very well at all, you can find out that the banking industry, the powers that be in Wall Street, manipulate the price of gold and silver. Gold they have a harder time with. Silver is absolutely price controlled, and it will only fluctuate a couple of dollars. Now there was a time that once in a while they'll let it go up, and once in a while they'll let it go down, but they definitely control the price of silver. Silver is typically more of a coinage. It's kind of the common man's coin. So silver is much more used. Now, I had this discussion with one of my left-wing friends that I don't ever talk to anymore because it's just gotten ridiculous. There was talk of going back on the gold standard or the silver standard back in... If that ever happened, if we ever went back to the silver standard, you would see the, and that's what the bankers are hedging their bets on. This idea that that might happen. So they have to keep some control in the market, and that's the only thing that really gives it any credibility in terms of their manipulation of it. But if this, I was talking to my friend, and they were saying that they don't understand how we could go back on the silver standard because they don't understand how people could carry enough silver around to make it practical. This is a person who I thought was intelligent, college educated individual. And I didn't even answer the question. I was dumbfounded. And you see, when was the last time you saw people in this country carrying around just silver to pay for things? The silver standard was actually gotten rid of. I believe it was during the Nixon administration. One of the only things, really, that I, policy-wise, that I didn't like about Nixon. He was a control freak, no less. He had some personality issues, and he was basically everything that they accused Trump of being. But Trump isn't, basically. But this guy, this Nixon was a, he had some personality issues. However, he was also a very brilliant individual. In terms of policy, economics, and understanding what was going on with the, but the one thing he did that he didn't have much foresight on was to unpin the dollar from silver. And the key thing here to realize is that, you know, the dollar wasn't based. We didn't walk around with silver. Well, you had silver dollars, but you didn't walk around with, you know, if you wanted to go buy a car, you didn't have $1,000 worth of silver in your pocket. This is what people don't understand. It was that you could go in and get a dollar's worth of silver from a bank. That $1 was equal to a dollar's worth of silver, and it was, I think it was based on however it was, an ounce of silver or whatever it was. And that was pinned to that price. So if the price of silver went up, the value of your dollar went up. Now we had, it was in the, unfortunately, President Ford, who took over after Nixon resigned in his second term, Ford finished out the remainder of Nixon's term and then ran, of course, and then didn't win. Carter won. The only reason Ford didn't win was because a couple different reasons. One, he was never elected, and nobody liked that. It's kind of like Kamala now is going to be, you know, the first woman president who was inserted by proxy. The Ford administration actually was doing an exceptionally good job. better, probably better than the Nixon administration. However, much of the policy that was in place was because of Nixon. What happened during that time was very interesting. And Ford didn't make a good plea to the American people and I don't know why there wasn't, it wasn't until after, like 10 years later, that he started coming out and talking about the economic situation and what was going on with the value of the dollar. And what they were doing was absolutely brilliant. The bankers hated it. Bankers absolutely hated it. And in fact, many on the left did not want, it's almost as if they were scared of him talking about it during the candidacy, during his campaign. And for some reason, that was the one thing I think he could have talked about that nobody, they were all just talking about the fact that, you know, I think he had pardoned Nixon, and that was his downfall. Back then, people had a little bit more of a memory because there wasn't as much happening in the news. And, of course, he only had three news channels. It was NBC, ABC, and CBS. And maybe if you were lucky enough to be in an area where you could actually get all three channels, you know, on your television. And then there was radio and print, of course, newspapers. Newspaper, everybody had got a newspaper. Nowadays, you know, the newspapers are dying out. And magazines. Magazines were a big deal. And the Encyclopedia Britannica. That was a big deal. The interesting thing that was going on, and most people don't realize this, in fact, even today, people don't talk about this because I don't think anybody's aware of it. We always talk about inflation, and bankers love inflation. If inflation is good, it makes the value of your home go up. No, it does not. It does not. The value of your home does not go up. What you're witnessing is the value of your dollar going down. And nobody will talk about this except for people like Ron Paul. Ron Paul understands inflation. He understands what's going on. Inflation is a tax on the stupid, on the unaware, I should say. I think the tax on the stupid, I think, is the lottery. That's the tax on the stupid. Now, if you're playing the lottery for fun or whatever you're just doing, you're goofing around, that's one thing. If some people are actually doing that that's their retirement plan. Of course, when they win, they have never learned how to manage money, and they think that they've hit it big, and they don't realize that. And this isn't everybody. I've seen some people who've won the lottery who actually managed it very well, set themselves up, and were taking care of the rest of their lives, and they didn't live beyond their means. They understood that was a one-time payout, and that's not their income. They didn't go out and buy Lamborghinis and billion-dollar homes, which, you know, property is not bad to buy, but the properties, you know, the million-dollar homes. When you start getting into million-dollar homes, I realize I'm rambling, because that's what I'm doing. That's what I do. I ramble. I'm a rambling guy. When you get into homes that are priced, depending on the location, of course, the region, I should say, if you're out in the West Coast, you know, most homes are extremely high priced, just inflated up way high. It's not unusual to have $1 million home and just live in a, you know, normal Yuppieville type arrangement. However, the cost of a home, and I've got 7 acres and a rather large home, 4-car garage and another outbuilding and a pool. And I'm nowhere near $1 million. I'm not even near not even $500,000 home. The fluctuation in property value in my area is much less. Very decent cost of living where I'm at. And yet I'm living, that same arrangement in some places would cost millions of dollars. What you don't realize, you know, like in my area, a million-dollar home, you start getting into that range of home, that price point. There are fewer and fewer people that can afford it. It's kind of like a triangle if you look at it on a scale. The higher up you go in that value, the narrower there is in terms of a list of clients that will purchase it. There's a fellow I know that lives in the area. I used to be a flight instructor back in the 90s, and I had this one client, one of my students. He owned about a $4 million home that he had gone in and done a bunch of stuff and fixed up this hole. It was like a gravel pit. It was a mess of an area. He went in and cleaned it all up, turned it into a really nice home, and built this really cool land type thing. It was lots of acres. I think it was probably 20 acres of land, and put this multi-million dollar home on it. And of course, he had it up for sale. He was going to try to sell it. And of course, the only people he could market it to were, I think Oprah looked at it. I think Michael Jordan looked at it. You're not talking about just your average people in the neighborhood who are coming over and looking at the home and thinking about, hey, I'll just move in there because my kids want to go to school here. No, that wasn't happening. That was only certain people can qualify for that home. You reduce the number of people in that market, your potential buyers, when you start moving up into that kind of a market. So there's something to say about investing in property, but you have to be kind of careful. It has to be property that's going to have an easy rate of return, as well as the ability to turn it over. A property, something, whenever you have property, it's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. Back when the crunch happened in 2008, I was asked the question, somebody was looking at their portfolio, that was back when everybody lost a whole bunch of money in their 401ks, or they their 401ks went down in value. And someone asked me the question, where did that go? They had a 401k that was worth about $80,000, and all of a sudden it was worth $50,000. And they said, where did all that money go? Well, it's not money. It's an investment in something that's worth something, and it's only worth what someone's willing to pay for it. And right now, that's all anyone's willing to pay for what you own in those stocks. It's not like you had $80,000 in cash in the bank and it just went down to $50,000. Did you ever ask yourself, when you had $50,000 in your 401k and all of a sudden the stock market goes up and everything goes up, all of a sudden there's $80,000 in there and you didn't put any money in, or you put $1,000 in, or whatever you put in every month, and all of a sudden it's worth $80,000. You never ask, where'd that money come from? It comes from inflation. Now, this idea that inflation is good has been promoted by banks for many, many years. Oh, we need inflation because that makes the value of everything go up. It does not. If you think, now it is a good way to hedge against inflation to buy a home. So let's say you buy a home, you go out and pay cash for it, you pay $100,000 for it. And then you go to sell that home, and all of a sudden it's worth $120,000. Well, you just made $20,000. Look at that. Well, that's also a misnomer as well, and I'll tell you why here in just a second. So you sell your home for $120,000, and you want to go out and buy another home just like it, or maybe a little nicer home. Oh, well, gee, that other home's going to cost me $130,000. If you just make a lateral move, it's $120,000. How much did you make then on your home? Well, supposedly you made $20,000. However, that's also a misnomer. In the 10 years that you owned it, you probably paid, $1,500 to $2,000 in property tax every year?
Well, yeah, but property tax, you have to pay property taxes, because you're getting services, like getting school and fire and police and all the county services.
So that's what they're doing with that. And so by the time you pay your property tax and live there, you didn't make anything at all. I pay in property tax for the properties that I own per year, We pay approximately, I believe it's about $7,000. I think. Right around there. Actually, a little more than that. Almost $8,000 in property tax every year. Now, you divide that up, that's, you're over $500 a month in property tax. It's, let's say, $600 a month. In my area, you can rent an apartment for $600 a month. Not a large apartment, not anything fancy, but you can rent an apartment for $600 a month for what I pay in property tax. And you don't pay property tax on a rental property. If you're renting, it's included in the deal. So that didn't even include that doesn't include any mortgage that we might have to pay. If you're paying a mortgage plus property tax, you stop and think about that. You're basically renting your property from the state. Because if you don't pay your property tax, who gets your property? The state does. Now, you might live in a state that doesn't have property tax. Good for you. I think that should be happening more and more. There's been some effort to do that. In the state of Indiana, a while back, this was back in the mid-90s, I think, or late 90s, there was an attempt to get rid of the property tax in the state of Indiana. Now, this was, of course, thwarted by the Republicans proposed it. There was I don't think the Republicans were in the majority at that time. I think the Democrats were. However, we had a Republican governor who screwed it all up. So what ended up happening, actually, no, we had a Democrat governor. That's what screwed it all up. The proposal was that we eliminate the property tax and that we put in we allow the sales tax to go up. So we would have a higher sales tax that would cover everything for the, in the event of the, for the opposite of not having a property tax. So this proposal went forward. And the Democrats very craftily came up with this idea of, we'll pass the increase on the sales tax first. And of course, the Republicans pushed back on that. But they had already committed to being willing to go, forward with a higher a higher sales tax. So the Democrats, they made a deal. They compromised. This is where I don't like compromise in policy when it's based on ideological issues. You can't compromise on your convictions, on your foundational issue. This is
why we compromise.
And the compromise always goes one way. Every time we compromise, we lose something. We're not gaining anything. We're losing something. We're losing liberty. We're losing freedom. And there's no price tag you can put on that. I'm sorry if life is tougher being free, but that's just the way being free is. Suck it up, buttercup, and this is the way it's going to work. It's the cost of freedom. So what ended up happening was they raised the sales tax, but they didn't raise it as high. I think we had to have a 9% sales tax, I believe, in order to do away with the property tax. What ended up happening was they raised the sales tax. Okay, well, we're going to compromise. We're going to raise the sales tax to 7%, and we're going to cap property tax for residential homes, for one residential home. If you own a residential home, your residence cannot be taxed, property taxed, more than X amount of dollars, X percentage. Well, so they played that game, and the Republicans were like, okay, well, I guess we'll have to settle for this, because they were, of course, in order to get it through, that's all they could do. Was they ended up getting a cap on property tax percentage on your residence, one residence. So if you were a landlord, you're still paying whatever tax they want. I think commercial property had a cap on it too for 2 years, and then it went away. So what happened? What ended up happening here? Well, all you have to do is reassess the value of everybody's property. Our property value, according to the assessor when they came around that year, our property value went up, guess what? 30%. Now, I don't know that we could have found anybody at that time who would have paid us that much money for that house. The city that I live, have my one of my properties in is also played this game a few years ago. After the cap was gone, they assessed my property at 3 times its original purchase price. Now, it had been in the in this one particular range, I think over the course of the 5 or 6 years that I owned it initially, it had never gone up. It didn't go up in value more than $10,000. It was just in an area where the property values were very stagnant. It's a commercial property. It's not really, there's not much happening in that area right now. It's actually a great place for me to have my office because I'm not a walk-in business, so it's not something I needed. I just needed a decent facility. And they decided that it was worth 3 times what I paid for it. In fact, it was worth more than the properties across the street that were for sale that had been for sale for over a year and nobody was buying them. That's the problem. So I walked down to City Hall. Actually, I drove down to City Hall, walked in the building. I should have driven in the building. That would have got more attention. I had a little chat with the assessor and talked this whole thing over. I said, so you're saying my property is worth that. I said, would you write out a check for me right now and just pay me that amount? I'll give you everything. I'll give you the building and everything that's in it. If you'll pay me for that, buy that property for that amount. I said, look at the property in the area. I said, even though the property in the area is going for that kind of price, it hasn't sold. One of the properties that had been for sale for 2 years hadn't sold. So it's only worth what someone's willing to pay for it, and you can assess it all day long all you want to. It's not worth that much. It tripled my property tax because all they have to do is reassess the value. So they played that game. So now we have a higher sales tax and we pay more in property tax. Great job, guys. That's what compromise does for you. And of course, this whole idea of inflation being a good thing for investments, you know, you put your money into the problem is you should be able to put your money into a savings account. Or just put your money in a cushion in a chair, and 10 years later pull that money out, and it should be worth what you because you your work was worth that much money back. You know what you worked to earn that money, so the value of your labor goes down, unless your wages go up, which they don't always. Wages do not ever keep. They can say they give you a cost of living wage increase. That is also a farce. That allows some people to get a raise and some people not to get a raise. Everybody falls behind eventually, and you have to work more hours, more jobs, two income families, second income, whatever. It puts more and more strain on the working class and on those. And then they wonder why the middle class is getting smaller, is disappearing, is suffering and struggling. Why the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer? Well, it's because the system is designed to do that. That's just what they're doing with it. That's what inflation does. The value of the dollar now is pinned on oil. We're in the world economic scene. Now, this gets me to a couple of points that I want to bring up. And this has nothing to do with I didn't have this in my notes at all to talk about. I just started going on this ramble here, this rambling rant, because I'm a rambling ranting guy. So the shortages. Now, I talked about this a while back, and in fact, I talked about this even before the lumber shortage. I had talked about how the supply chain, when they started shutting things down and saying that only essential workers could work and only certain products could be built and made, you don't realize. It's almost as if they had no clue. This was just all on the fly that they were doing this stuff, and they had just knee-jerk reaction to this stuff. And unfortunately, Trump didn't have the people around him to really help him understand what was going to happen here. You can't just shut down segments of the economy that are deemed unessential Because every job is essential to everyone who has a job. So that person who has the hot dog stand or has the, you know, makes the eyelets for your shoes, the money that they make, the work that they do, the things that they supply for, is it's like the butterfly flaps its wings in Africa, causes a storm, and you know, everything is tied together in a sense that if you start monkeying with that, the supply chain is extremely delicate. Now we're seeing imbalances in all kinds of shortages, and because you can't just like the chip market, the computer chip market. They were making X amount of chips all the time. They had their machines running. You can't just shut that down and turn it back up again. Why, you ask? Well, because there's the facilities that they build those things in have to be maintained at a certain level. They had to retool to make chips for other things. When they went back to turn the lights back on to start making chips again, they started realizing, well, we have to re-clean everything. We have to do, you know, this has to be a sterile environment. It has to be all this stuff. You can't just fire up things and start making things again. And so this whole imbalance thing starts to happen. You get this caboose effect in terms of what can be produced, what can't be produced, and all these little things that people, because everybody's on into this just-in-time shipping stuff where you, as you manufacture things, you get it just as it's manufactured. There's nobody warehousing anything anymore. And part of the reason for that is because the incredible growth in technology in terms of how fast things change. If you have something in a warehouse that's been there for a year, now you got something that's a year old, nobody's going to want to put that in their product anymore because there's something better out there. That's part of it. And all that balances out and makes it very, you know, extremely difficult to make it all work. And once you start eliminating certain things out of that supply chain, and that's what sets off a trigger for a massive problem with inflation and shortages. Carter tried to do this back in the 70s. He was doing this kind of stuff, we didn't have a problem except for his policies. And all of a sudden, his policies caused all this stuff to start happening. Now, this partially is happening as well with the Biden administration. However, it's exacerbated on a grander scale because of the energy issue. And we're paying people to stay home. Congress has been a part of this as well. The whole idea of paying people to stay home, staying on, you know, the labor market is short. We have more jobs than people applying for them. That whole thing started out is a mess. As the economy started opening back up again, they're still paying people to stay home. Well, of course they're going to stay home. Now they want to give people free childcare so they can get back to work. That's not going to work. They're going to take a vacation, take their kids to childcare, and they're going to go off on vacation. Because this idea that we're going to buy our way out. There's also these studies now that are showing that, oh, this guaranteed, you know, minimum income thing is working out really well in some areas. Well, no, it's not. It's not working out. There's a place in Gary, they were quoting an area in Gary that are giving people this income, guaranteed monthly income or whatever it is. And that it's not working there. I live not that far from Gary. Trust me, it's not working. It's messing things up. And the reason that they're doing it is because the whole casino industry and everything that's there is in mess. It's just made a mess out of that town. At one point, they were talking about having the National Guard there. The continued effort that they're making now of course now we have the lumber market was the first. I'm stammering around. I know I'm stammering. I'm very much aware of it. I just rolled out of bed, and I got all this milk in my mouth. The labor market is in a huge shortage. We have mostly a service industry based economy now. The lumber shortage that happened early on after we started opening up the economy, it's questionable as to whether or not there was a real shortage or how much the shortage really did affect things, but there was also the middlemen who were driving the price up and hoarding lumber. It kind of came back to bite them a little bit because now all of a sudden there's a glut of lumber prices are still high and nobody's buying. So the prices are dropping again in lumber. They didn't get caught doing this, but they were doing it. Because there was a few whistleblowers trying to say what was happening. Nobody was paying attention to them. What happened during the Nixon administration, actually in the Ford administration, during the Ford presidency, we had something called deflation. When have you ever heard of that? Economically, it was not an easy time, necessarily. But anyone who had savings, just like money in the bank, the value of their dollar went up. You could have money in a cabinet in your house, and it could buy you a week's worth of groceries. By the end of the Ford administration, that same amount of money in your cabinet could buy you 2 weeks of groceries, or maybe a week and a half. That's what was happening with the value of the dollar. Prices were not going up. Of course, home values were not going up. And people who were investing didn't like that. However, they didn't. It was an invisible increase in the value of their dollar that they didn't see. And of course, Ford didn't. He just didn't campaign properly with that. But he was already vilified by the media and by most of the public, because they were mad because he was never elected and here he was the president, and also that he pardoned Nixon. And people who voted for Nixon hated Nixon after they found out what he had been doing. The whole cover up, the whole thing with G. Gordon Liddy and all those guys. So that's, of course, now the same people who were involved, the reporters who were involved in Watergate, are now after Trump. They brought them out of the closet, out of the tomb, the crypt, to go after Trump. And that's all they're doing now. They think that this is all, they're equating it to Watergate. They're thinking that if we bring these guys back, it looks like Watergate again. And looks like, we know, these guys were known for their pursuit of the Watergate thing. So that's what's happening there. Now, along with all of this, the other thing I want to talk about, and this is, there's a climate summit thing going on, I think, or climate whatever it is, COP, whatever it's called, I don't know, climate something, I don't know. And you'll see all these reports now from UP and AP and all these places that are putting out reports now about the climate and what's happening with islands that are going to be underwater soon, and this is happening, this is how the sea levels are rising, and blah, 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 blah. That's why all the politicians are buying waterfront properties. They don't believe this stuff any more than this is an attempt to put in a global carbon tax. Now stop and think about this for a moment. There's already, I think, everybody in the G summit, I think it has been voted in now that there will be a global tax imposed on corporations. This has never been done before. And yet the media is acting like, yeah, they need to be taxed. You need to understand the basic fundamentals of a tax. Not how it works, not how you pay it, not what, where it goes. Who has the authority to tax you? Those who are subject to a tax are subjects of the one who imposes the tax. Who enforces this global tax? A global government? Absolutely. That's the only thing that can. Where does this money go? It goes to fund this global government. How far will it reach? I guarantee you, once they get their foot in the door with any tax, it will grow roots and stem into our everyday lives. Mark my words, this global tax, this idea that, you know, we need to tax these rich corporations that are global corporations, this will be the step that they needed to do. It's accepted worldwide because we've vilified the rich, these big corporations, we've vilified them. Most of them will get out of it. And in the process, they will begin to reach into our pockets because there won't be enough money in these big global governments. Much like the billionaire tax only covers about 5% of what they need for this $1 trillion bill they're trying to get through. Same thing. So, I digress, and I bid you adieu, because I hear the music coming in. Time for me to be done. So we pray. Pray that we will have our eyes open and we can somehow fight back against all this tyranny. God's in control of his kingdom. We shall be with him. Have a great day, everybody. God bless.